I'd like to thank Will and John for hosting this symposium. It's enjoyable, and I appreciate the invitation. So most of the stuff today I'll show today is from Will Osterholz. He was a PhD student and worked with Matt Liebman and me. He got a really good experience working with crop production and soil science. I think he's got a unique perspective there. He's currently a postdoc at the University of Wisconsin. So what does diversity look like in Iowa? So this is diversity in Iowa, right? It's about a 250 square mile slice of Iowa that I cut out from the USDA land use, right? So Iowa State is right about there. For reference, the yellow is corn, the green is soybeans. Over two-thirds of the surface area of Iowa is in corn and soybeans, right? But you can still even see some diversity here. And so look over here. There's quite a bit more yellow than there is over here, right? And, we laugh, right? But that's farmers responding to how diversity interacts with the environment and the soil that they have available to them. There's more continuous corn grown here because it's the Des Moines lobe. The yield penalty for growing continuous corn is less than it is over here off the Des Moines lobe. There's not a whole lot of diversity in Iowa, right? But something good has come out of this area. So our next speaker, Keith Paustian, is from over here, actually. So that's good. When Keith was a kid, did the landscape look like this? Keith?
Pretty much.
Well, the numbers don't 100% agree with Keith, or he's a lot younger than I think he is. But there was more alfalfa in corn 30, 40 years ago, right? And a lot of the green on the landscape there, imagine if a lot of that was the pink in the alfalfa and the purple in the small grains. So a lot of oats and alfalfa would have been on that landscape, and they largely would have been occupying the area that's now occupied by soybeans. Corn acres have pretty much stayed the same in Iowa since the 30s or 40s. And so what are the consequences and causes of this land use change? So first, what are the causes of this land use change? Two major inventions enabled this switch from corn, soybeans, small grains, and alfalfa to continuous corn and corn soybeans. And they were the Haber-Bosch nitrogen synthesis process, right, one of the greatest inventions in human history, and the internal combustion engine, right? So you've got tractors, you no longer need horses, you no longer need oats, you no longer need alfalfa, you've got the nitrogen fertilizer, and next thing you know, you can grow high-value crops 100% of the time. So what are the consequences of this major land use change, though? So we used to have a lot more diversity on the landscape. It was cropped, but a lot more diversity. The consequences are we started to become very leaky for nitrogen. So the systems were much more nitrogen retentive when we had small grains and alfalfa in the landscape for reasons I'll get to in a minute. But the consequences of this big nitrate loss are profound. So we've got the Des Moines Water Works, the largest water supplier in the state. They supply over a third of the state, suing the drainage districts in northeast Iowa. Look out on the Supreme Court's docket in a few years. That's where I expect that one to go to. And we've got the Gulf of Hypoxia problem down in the Chesapeake Bay. And so I mentioned that diverse crop system. So when the landscape had all this cover on it decades ago, we didn't have all this nitrate loss, right? This is really not coincident with nitrogen fertilizer application. The increase in nitrate loss down to the Gulf is coincident with this land use change from corn, soybeans, oats, alfalfa to corn and soybeans only. And so I want to really highlight that here. So when we think about the four R's and things, the four R's are good. They're improvements they can make in nitrate losses. But I really want to highlight here, improve nitrogen fertilizer management. It's really got a limited ability to reduce nitrate loads to the Gulf of Mexico. And there's three studies that have all come to this similar conclusion, a remarkably narrow range of potential improvement, one using a process model, the other using a statistical model, and the other using a meta-analysis approach. Right? So there's limited ability there. We know diverse crop systems, on the other hand, can make large reductions. And so this is a diverse cropping systems experiment in Iowa on that map I showed you earlier. It's the Marsden Farm experiment, it's called. It's Matt Liebman's long-term crop rotation experiment. And so we have three treatments here. We've got a maize soybean two-year rotation. That's what we've got on the landscape mostly today. A three-year maize soybean small grain rotation. So you grow maize, you grow soybeans, you grow a small grain that's underseeded with a clover. The grain gets harvested, the straw gets harvested as well. The clover takes off because that small grain gets harvested in late July. And then you've got nitrogen input for your corn the following year. You also get a lot of manure along with that nitrogen in the corn and the oats. In the four-year rotation, you get maize, soybean, the small grain. This time it's underseeded with alfalfa. So the small grain comes off, the straw comes off, the alfalfa takes off. Maybe you get one cut in that first year, and then you get many more cuts in the second year. And so these three- and four-year rotations, importantly, are managed with manure. The two-year, this is a cropping systems experiment. It's managed like a two-year rotation in Iowa would be, with synthetic fertilizers, right? That's a major difference there. And the three-year rotation gets the most manure because it's getting the manure in the small grain and the maize year there, just to give you an idea. You may see that pop out later. The other thing I want to notice, because I'm going to come back to it, is the blocking of this experiment, right? So it's blocked, 1, 2, 3, 4, randomized, complete block design there. So in this system, it's been going on for like 15 years now, so even the four-year rotations have gone through more than three times. Here's some data from the 15 years. So maize yield, it's significantly higher in the three-year and four-year rotation, while the June nitrate pool, this is basically the pre-side dress nitrate pool that Michelle referred to earlier, is significantly lower in the three- and four-year rotation. So you're getting more yield with less inorganic fertilizer in these more diverse rotations, right? And so what's causing that? So Matt and I got together and we put together this concept model to try and help us understand and test some hypotheses about how nitrogen might be moving around in the system. So this is kind of the conventional model. It's reliant on this huge inorganic nitrate pool size, and we've got really small labile soil organic matter pools that we can rely on to produce more inorganic N. Got crop uptake, we probably expect large nitrous oxide losses from denitrification, large nitrate leaching losses because there's just this big pool of nitrate waiting for a rain, you know, to knock it out of the system. Maybe a little bit less nitrous oxide from nitrification rates, though, because maybe they're a little bit lower when we think about the gross nitrification process. So we want to contrast that here, though, with a more diversified system. So here, we've got a bigger labile organic matter pool and smaller inorganic pools to match with the actual data we have. What we didn't have and we're interested in testing is that maybe these gross fluxes and gross immobilization are higher. So you've got a smaller pool, but it's turning over more and more rapidly. So the corn actually sees more nitrogen over time, right? And we wanted to know if this is partly responsible for the rotation effect, the fact that you get higher crop yields when they're rotated with many crops versus few crops. So we developed a couple of questions to test. So first, can the soil nitrogen supply meet the maize nitrogen demand? If it can't, our concept model is kind of out of the water, right, to begin with. It's done. So is the rate of nitrogen mineralization from soil organic matter greater than the rate of maize nitrogen uptake? And second, do differences in the soil nitrogen supply explain the cropping system effect on maize yield? So is greater nitrogen mineralization associated with greater corn yield? And those are the questions and hypotheses we'll answer today. So many studies report net nitrogen mineralization, right? So this is the accumulation or reduction in the inorganic N pool size over time in the absence of plant roots. Our first speaker talked about that today. Are lower than maize nitrogen uptake. And so Magdoff back in the 90s hypothesized that these intensive low diversity crop systems are inherently dependent on these huge inorganic nitrogen pools because the soil simply can't supply the 250 kilograms or so of nitrogen that a 12-ton corn yield is going to require, right? In contrast, though, so we're thinking about gross nitrogen mineralization rates. So our gross nitrogen mineralization rates greater than maize nitrogen uptake. And so specifically, you know, so although net nitrogen mineralization is lower than crop demand, is gross nitrogen mineralization equal to or greater than crop nitrogen demand? So we conducted this experiment in 2014. So across the corn phase of those three rotations I introduced earlier, the 2-year, the 3-year, and the 4-year, we measured the rate of nitrogen uptake. This is on growing degree days, so the maximum rate of nitrogen uptake. And here is the rate just versus regular days. And so this is actually the maximum rate pulled out from those curves. And so hold on to these numbers in your head. So the 2-year is roughly 3.5, and the 3 and 4 year, a little bit over 4 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per day. So that's the maximum rate that corn is taking up nitrogen in these systems. So how does that compare with the gross nitrogen mineralization in the soil? So the gross nitrogen mineralization in the soil is a whole lot higher. So we measured it down to 80 centimeters because we know corn's got it down there. We were really trying to put together a budget here of inputs and outputs. And so, you know, when you sum these together, you've got somewhere between 15 and 20 kilograms of gross nitrogen mineralization per hectare per day. So, of course, microbes are taking up some of that too, but we know from the recent study, you know, more and more studies are showing that crops can successfully compete for that gross ammonification with microbes. And so as a percent of the total uptake of corn, you know, the total uptake is just 20 to 25%, or maybe 15 to 30% if you look at the errors of the total gross nitrogen mineralization. So yeah, the soil can meet the maize nitrogen demand supply, particularly if we can get corn that is more competitive for that gross mineralized nitrogen with the microbes, right? So the answer is yes there. Okay, so on to the second question. So do differences in nitrogen supply explain the cropping system effect on maize yield? So is plant nitrogen uptake greater in diverse systems? Is soil nitrogen mineralization greater in diverse systems? And really, most importantly, is plant uptake and nitrogen mineralization positively associated? Is this a path we want to go forward with as we think about the rotation effect and what causes the rotation effect? Obviously, there are many causes, but is nitrogen mineralization an important one? So again, just to refresh your memories on the data from this Marsden Farm experiment, higher yields with lower spring nitrate pool sizes, right? So this is measured right around V5 growth stage of corn. So it's, you know, from the table to about here in height. We conducted this experiment again in 2014, so we're looking at some of the same data as earlier with some new data added to them. This is an important figure for the rest of the talk, so I want to go through it pretty slowly. So here are the cumulative nitrogen uptake rate, cumulative nitrogen uptake by the corn in the 2-year, the 3-year, and the 4-year, right? So you can see there is quite a bit difference in the total nitrogen uptake by that corn, slightly under 200 to over 230 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare in that total corn above ground biomass. Here we're looking at the soil nitrate pool size from 0 to 30 centimeters. And so the brownish dots are the 2-year, and the orange and the green are the 3 and 4 year again. So while we measured these pools of nitrogen over time, at 3 points in time, we measured gross nitrogen mineralization and potentially mineralizable nitrogen. And these 3 time points correspond to the V5 stage, right when the rate of corn nitrogen uptake becomes exponential. The VT growth stage, when the rate is the highest, so the slope of the line is the steepest. And the R4 stage, excuse me. So this R4 stage, it turns out, is really critical for plant breeders. They think about this stage all the time because it's the stage that's associated with this stay green effect, right? So if the corn will stay green for longer and take up more nitrogen right at this end period, they found that that is really associated with a big bump in yield. It's a highly sought after trait by corn breeders. So that's why we chose those three. So looking at those measurements we made at those 3 time points, so the inorganic nitrogen pool size was different at the first time point, but not at the other time points, right? So it became low and similar at the VT and R4 growth stages. The potentially mineralizable nitrogen, it was always lower in the 2-year rotation compared to the 3- and 4-year, but really only significantly lower at this VT stage. And then gross nitrogen mineralization rate, it really wasn't consistently different. Slightly lower, but we couldn't find any differences across the treatments, consistent differences. No real big differences popped out. So no differences across the cropping systems in these processes and pools, but what about differences associated with nitrogen uptake? So if we think about all the systems together, are these measures of nitrogen associated with crop nitrogen uptake at all? And so here we've got the mean soil organic nitrogen pool size at that time point early in the season where there was a difference, and it's totally unrelated to corn nitrogen uptake. No pattern at all there. So here's gross nitrogen mineralization and total nitrogen content. And so here we've basically got the three time points on one figure. And the only reason I fit lines to them, it's not because they're significant in any case. It's just to keep your eyes focused on the different time points. So the V5, no pattern. VT, no pattern. R4, no association at all between gross nitrogen mineralization and corn nitrogen content. Potential mineralizable nitrogen, again, no association in any of those three growth stages, right? So we're really really knocking our heads against the wall at this point, right? But that's okay. It's good to reject hypotheses. So do we know what we're doing, right? So when you run into data like this, the first thing you do is you go and you look for something that you know affects the process in the pool, right? Something that there's got to be a relationship with there to make sure you did the stuff right. And so gross nitrogen mineralization is consistently related with soil organic carbon content. And we did find that, right? So gross ammonification, it is positively and pretty closely related with soil organic carbon content across the three systems. And so really kind of neat, though, what we found when we started looking at the data this way is that the slope of the lines here, all these slopes are significant, and the slope for the 3- and 4-year rotation are significantly greater than the slope for the 2-year rotation there. So what that kind of tells us is that, okay, cropping system may not make that much of a difference, but coming back to kind of the idea behind the symposium here, the organic amendments, so at these higher, with these manure inputs and the green manures, the animal manures, it seems to say you get more bang for your buck in terms of gross nitrogen mineralization on the carbon input to that system, right? So when you do have higher organic matter, you are getting more N mineralization from it. And so when we covary for that, if we look at the residuals on that gross nitrogen mineralization, at the R4 stage, that really important stage for plant breeders, it is positively related with total nitrogen content. So when you correct for the total carbon content of the soil, that extra gross nitrogen mineralization is associated with total nitrogen uptake at kind of that stay green stage. And so that is it's a bright spot to come out of this, not that rejecting the hypotheses isn't. I think that's an important step forward. So questions. So can soil nitrogen supply meet maize nitrogen demand? So yeah, maize nitrogen uptake is just a small proportion of the total N mineralization. So there may be improvements there in terms of breeding, I'll get back to in a minute, and in terms of how we think about how nitrogen mineralizes in the soil. So before we answer question two, I want to get back to the experimental design here and note that this experiment was blocked, right? There's four blocks. And what we find in the data consistently in this experiment and many others in Iowa is that the blocking effect has a much bigger effect than the treatment effect, despite decades of treatments in many of these, this experiment and many others in Iowa, right? So landscape variability, is a big player in this. And so do differences in nitrogen supply explain the cropping system effect on yield? So not really, right? They don't. And this is, we're rejecting a hypothesis here, but we're really positive about the results. There's a lot of things that can affect the rotation effect or cause the rotation effect, and we feel like we made a significant step towards rejecting nitrogen dynamics as one of those, at least in the soil. And so as soil scientists, we like to think soil is important and we love soil, right? But maybe we should be thinking about the sink, right? The roots, maybe those roots in the 3 and 4 years, something we didn't measure. Maybe they're more effective at taking up the nitrogen. Maybe the amount of nitrogen lost after it's taken up by the crop is also lower, and we're just missing it, right? Those could be possible explanations. And so with that, I'd just like to thank the folks who funded this work, and I'd be happy to take any questions if there's time.
Covariant with soil organic carbon is reduction in bulk density, better rooting environment, better water holding capacity. Are these types of explanations that you're thinking about at this point?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that's the next area for us to go into is bulk density, water availability, as it's affected by that. The difference in water availability doesn't seem to be affecting the rates, or at least we would be measuring it, right? But I think it's got to be due to the roots. I'm very curious to know if there's more roots, if they're more effective at taking up nitrogen in those diverse rotations. Yeah.
How was the gross mineralization measured?
Yeah, so how was the gross nitrogen mineralization measured? That's a great question and something we really struggle with and why we only have 1 year of data. So the first year, it was a total failure. So we tried to do it the way, like Steve has typically done it with the, and we've done it in the past with intact soil cores and the isotope pool dilution method, but you can't do that. It's very difficult to do that in agricultural systems, right? Because, you know, we banned ammonium nitrogen fertilizer, so it's heterogeneous. This is a major problem for ecosystem models, too. And so the pool sizes are just, they're very variable, and that obviously violates one of the major assumptions of that method. So what we had to do is we took the soil out, and we kind of hand broke it up, mixed it around, put it back in the core, and did the isotope pool dilution that way. So there could be some, you know, some effects that we didn't account for there. But we tried to keep the same bulk density and stuff. But yeah, there was a lot of learning to be done. Yeah, Francesca? Yes and no. So we have done some, you know, real simple fractionations looking at particular organic matter and mineral-associated organic matter. And there's some small differences that are measurable, but whether they're relevant ecologically, I'm not certain. We've also, some colleagues have found differences in proteolytic enzymes. They're more abundant in the 3 and 4 year systems, but whether that's carbon or nitrogen, it's hard to say. So there's no clear cut. Yes, we've looked at some of those things at a very coarse level, and there's no clear answers there.
Quickly.
Looking at that difference between that bang for the buck between the inorganic nitrogen inputs and the longer rotations, what do you think might be the soil microbes' contribution to that? Do you think you have a more robust group there that are turning things over quicker, getting you that bang for the buck?
Yeah, so there are some soil microbiologists at Iowa State looking at that now, trying to answer who's there and more specifically who is doing what in terms of archaea and bacteria. And I think there's some answers to be found there, but we don't have them yet.
Okay, thanks, Mike.